When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hello, survivalists. This is the Crux True Survival Stories. I am your host, Casey McIntosh, and today I'm doing another solo episode because Julie wasn't able to meet up with me, but we are going to delve into a remarkable story of survival. Today we're talking about Victoria Grover, a woman from Maine whose love for the wilderness runs deep within her veins. She was going to a hiking trip in southern Utah, and she learned a profound rule about the consequences of mistakes, something that she would experience firsthand. In 2012, Victoria embarked on what was meant to be a rejuvenating hiking trip, leaving behind the bustle of her medical career in northern Maine. Little did she know this journey would become a testament to resilience and the stark reality of human fallibility. As she ventured into the Box Death Hollow Wilderness, Victoria found herself intoxicated by the rugged beauty surrounding her. But what began as euphoria soon turned into peril as daylight waned, casting her into an unforgiving embrace of the desert night. In this episode, we follow Victoria's harrowing ordeal, from the desperate scramble for survival to the agonizing realization that no one knew of her disappearance. Yet amidst the trials and tribulations, Victoria's story is not one of bitterness or blame, but forgiveness and acceptance. Join me as we discuss Victoria's challenging 5-day desert ordeal. 3 mistakes about the topic of being lost in the desert, which could apply to any survival situation. Victoria said the following: You get three mistakes. The first mistake, you're probably going to recover from that and everything's going to be fine. The second mistake is a little more difficult, and the third mistake kills you. Victoria Grover lives in Maine and, interestingly, is a physician assistant. I don't know if you guys remember, but that's what Julie and I both are, PAs. She traveled from Maine to southern Utah to go on a hiking vacation, and she was by herself. The first day of her trip was a Monday in April. She looked at some maps and tried to chart out a hiking route for the day. She went to the front desk at the lodge she was staying at to ask questions about the trailhead. She was chatting with a younger man, and the last thing she said to him was that she was going to be going to Box Death Hollow, and she was planning on being back no later than 8 or 9 p.m. She also asked if there was any dinner, if they could hold it for her, and he said yes, that they could do that. At that point, she looked him in the eye and said, "So I'll see you tonight." And he said, "Fine." And at that point, she left. To get to the trailhead, Victoria drove down a road called Hell's Backbone. And soon thereafter, she was enjoying her hike. Death Box Hollow is a unique wilderness area nestled in the heart of South Central Utah's Dixie National Forest. It spans over 25,000 acres. This rugged landscape is characterized by towering gray-orange walls of Navajo sandstone and the untamed beauty of the canyon tributaries. But what's in a name? The moniker Death Hollow holds a somber history going back to a time where the steep canyons claimed the lives of multiple livestock that were attempting difficult crossings. It's just kind of a vivid reminder of the unforgiving nature of the terrain, almost like a premonition. At the heart of Death Box Hollow lies the Box, a canyon accessible only from the lower end. It's been carved by relentless force of Pine Creek. Meanwhile, Death Hollow Creek winds its way through a gently dipping monocline. Its waters often are swelling to raging torrents after a bout of rainfall. Box Death Hollow has a very rugged exterior and just that feeling of potential danger. But amidst all of that, it is home to mule deer, cougars, and elk. And also the waterways are full of rainbow and brown trout. There are pinyon and juniper trees growing on plateaus just above the canyons. Apparently, Death Box Hollow is a great place for bird watchers, and there are some species that might be endangered that you can actually see in Death Box Hollow area, including Lewis's woodpeckers, western bluebird, and the mountain bluebird. Traversing this untamed landscape is not a small feat. There are designated trails that span just about 9 miles long along the box. But beyond that point, people that are out there hiking have to navigate through drainages or forge their own way through the wilderness. Victoria was really enjoying being out there. She was just having such a great time hiking on the trail. She ended up losing track of time. And before she knew it, the sun was going down, which was mistake number one. She said in an interview, quote, "I don't know if ecstasy is the right word, but I was just really, really happy. It had been so many years since I'd been there and so many years since I'd been able to do anything like that. So I felt like I was flying down that trail, and I got down the trail and then I kind of went up into more hills and I got higher up. I was so happy. And all of a sudden I noticed it was getting dark." With some urgency, she started to walk back towards her car, but it was so dark that she had to pull out a small flashlight from her emergency kit to light the way, and this flashlight was not very bright. She became frantic, not because it was getting dark, but she was concerned about people having to call the alarm bells, call search and rescue, get volunteers out to start looking for her. And, you know, haste makes waste. Victoria was moving faster and faster during her descent, and she ended up sliding and she skidded 3 to 4 feet. And when she landed, she was right next to a 20 to 30 foot cliff. And that's the point when she realized that she needed to take it easy and just stop for the night, get her bearings. For most people, that might give them a feeling of concern, dread, worry. I don't know what you want to call it, but in general, Victoria was not really concerned about spending the night. Out in the wilderness because she had actually taken a 1 month long wilderness survival course in this same area 40 years before. And she knew what she needed to survive here, but also she had a lot of outdoor experience. This is what she said about the first night. "Of course, nobody's made a fire out there in a million years, so there was lots of dead wood. And I had a very nice fire and watched the stars and listened to the coyotes and had a nice night. It got quite cold, but the fire was really good and I kept it going all night." In the morning, she gathered herself and started walking toward the car, probably expected that she was going to be back at the lodge by lunchtime. And as she was heading down, she was following an ancient water path. She was just chucking her bag down ahead of her and sliding down some rock formations. And I think this was going pretty well. She was making some good time. But on the last ledge, she threw her pack in front of her. And when she went to jump, which was about a distance of 4 feet, she lost her balance. She ended up landing in some sand against a rock at an angle. And when she went to get up, she realized that something was really wrong. Her knee was facing up, but her foot was lying on its side on the ground. And she could see that there was something going on with the bones in her lower leg. When she assessed herself, she realized that she had a tib-fib fracture, which is a pretty serious injury. She made a splint out of a broken tree branch, but of course, there's no weight bearing when both of the bones in your lower leg are broken. She started to yell and bang rocks together in an effort to make as much noise as possible, because at this point, she realizes she can't walk out of there. And most of the day, she spent yelling and banging rocks together. By the afternoon, she realized that she was spending another night out there. Luckily, she was able to find a stream down below her, and she made it there by dragging and scooting and got there just as the sun went down. Unfortunately, that night was very cold. The temperatures were near freezing, and the lowest temp was 38 degrees. And all she had to keep herself warm or protect herself from the elements was a poncho from the dollar store, which is better than nothing, but Not great. She wrapped this around her head to keep in as much warmth from her breath as she could. And periodically, she had to take it off of herself and wring out condensation from her breath and then turn it around the other way. This is what she had to do all night long. The next day was Wednesday, which is day number 3 since her initial outing. And in her mind, she's assuming that the authorities have been notified and there's a search party out looking for her, which is probably a good thing because I don't think she spent most of her time worrying about it. She napped during the day in the sunshine when she could, and when she wasn't sleeping, she spent time banging on rocks and yelling. In one of the articles I was reading, she mentioned that she was feeling kind of bored being out there for all of that time by herself. She spent most of the time at night awake, just trying to keep herself warm. Hours and hours are passing. She's hungry and cold. And when things seem bleak, they got a little bit worse when it started to rain. But aside from just having access to water, another wonderful thing that came out of the rain was that the desert flowers started to bloom, which only happens at night after it rains. So she was able to enjoy the smell of desert flowers, which has to be a very rare occurrence. Maybe a little bit uplifting for her at that point. On Thursday morning, she felt confident rescuers were going to find her, but then the day passed and there was no one. Her situation was made worse by the fact that she had type 2 diabetes and she didn't bring very much food, just some light snacks and no water. And at that point, everything was gone. She was starting to feel a little bit angry and hopeless, I think, at that point. She didn't want to spend another night out there. In regard to how cold it was and what it's like to experience that, she said, quote, "You just shiver violently. It's like jumping into a cold, icy lake and not being allowed to get out. There's no place, not one place, where you aren't excruciatingly cold. And the shivering is just as bad as the cold because it's so exhausting. It's like doing push-ups and never being allowed to stop." One thing that kept her going was the thought that her life was easier most of the time compared to a lot of other people in the world. One thing that kept her going through this whole thing was the thought that despite how difficult her challenges were in that moment, most of the time she enjoyed a pretty easy lifestyle compared to a lot of people in the world. And also she just grasped onto hope and through her faith as a Mormon when times were difficult. She made it through that night, but during Friday afternoon, she noticed that she hadn't had to urinate in quite some time. And having the medical background that she did, she knew that her kidneys were likely starting to shut down. And that night, despite the cold, she wasn't shivering as much. And she knew that that was a bad sign. She survived the night, but she was still thinking that there was the potential that when the rescuers found her, there was just going to be a body and she would no longer be alive. But just as things seemed like they couldn't get any worse, instead of getting even more worse, they got better when she was discovered by a rescue helicopter on Saturday morning. So this rescue helicopter saw Victoria by the stream, and they were surprised when she sat up and waved to them. They landed and got out all their gear. They wrapped her in blankets, and they flew her to Cedar City Hospital. She was so thankful for the rescuers and stated, "I cannot say enough about how wonderful it was to see them, not just when they arrived and I realized I was rescued, but their behavior. They obviously knew what they were doing. They came down. They were comforting. They were kind." When she was finally able to speak with her husband, she said that she was okay and that she just mainly felt bad that everyone had been looking for her and how much she had inconvenienced everyone. And that's when he told her that no one was looking for her and no one even knew that she was missing. She was baffled about that and she emotionally felt like she hit rock bottom. The next morning after her rescue, she had surgery, and following the procedure, there was a flood of media attention coming her way, people asking her for interviews, even some of the bigger media outlets. And initially, she was really struggling because she didn't want to have to tell them that she actually told someone where she was going and that person didn't call the alarm bells when she didn't return. She just didn't want the story to be about that. But alternatively, she would have to be telling a story about how she made a bad decision and she went into the desert without alerting anyone. Finally, she decided she was going to do an interview and she left out the part about how she told someone where she was going. But then one of the TV reporters was being patronizing about you know, the next time you go somewhere, you got to tell someone where you're going. And to that, she blurted out that she did tell someone, and next time she will be more careful about who she tells. And then the TV person turned to her and said, "You didn't tell anyone where you were going, did you?" And at that point, she just said no and let it go. Victoria later made peace with that whole instance because she found out that the reason that the young man at the front desk didn't notify anyone is because he finished his shift and he went on vacation for a few days and didn't think to relay her message. And no one at the lodge noticed that she was missing until her checkout date came and went. They called the sheriff's office on Friday, and that's when the search began. Deputies had found her rental car agreement in her room at the lodge, and they started looking at nearby trailheads to get an idea of where Victoria may have gone. The trail Victoria had chosen was considered to be a difficult trail, and it wasn't often traveled. It's also a trail that's considered for advanced hikers. By Friday, the day she was found, the deputies finally had called the Utah Highway Patrol search helicopter, and search and rescue teams were also on horseback and found some of her tracks, but she was spotted by air at 9:30 a.m. on Saturday. She was able to forgive the young man at the lodge and make peace with the whole concept of having to be rescued. You know, over time, the shame and guilt improved. Victoria went back to her medical practice in Maine and has spent time enjoying the outdoors. And this is what she has to say about the wilderness. "It's safe. It was safe then. It still feels safe now. It's civilization that's so anxiety provoking." Victoria's journey just serves as a great reminder of how unpredictable nature is and just the importance of being prepared for your outdoor adventures. And again, just remembering to tell people where you're going and when you plan to be returning. That can go a long way. I mean, sometimes it can cause increased anxiety for those people that are waiting for your phone call at home, but it's still definitely worthwhile. Thank you for joining me on this journey into the wilderness with Victoria. We appreciate all your support and for listening. To stay updated and for more inspiring stories and outdoor adventures, follow us on Instagram at The Crux Podcast and reach out to us via email at thecruxsurvival@gmail.com. Until next time, stay safe and keep on adventuring. Have a great rest of your week, you guys.